This is Director Jared Maples of the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness, and I want to welcome you to Season 2 of Intelligence Unclassified. This season, we are refocusing our episodes to better reflect our office's three core mission areas: counterterrorism, cybersecurity, and emergency preparedness. We'll be pulling both local and national experts in these three fields, all in an effort to discuss New Jersey's diverse threat landscape and offer you a unique perspective on the current trends and issues facing the Garden State. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. Please feel free to add this podcast to your RSS feed or iTunes. You can also follow NJOHSP on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at NJOHSP. All links can be found in the show notes and on our website at www.njhomelandsecurity.gov.
Hi, my name is Dean Barada from the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness. On May 15th, our office held its second annual domestic terrorism conference, where we brought together law enforcement, intelligence, and academic professionals to discuss the topic of domestic terrorism and its presence in our communities across the country and internationally. The series of podcasts you're about to hear are interviews with many of those featured speakers who were there that day. We hope you find them interesting and as informative as we did. Hello, my name is Dean Barada from the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness, and today I'm joined by Lisa McInerney. Lisa is the program manager for VoxPol and a research fellow in the School of Law and Government at Dublin City University in Ireland. Her research interests are in violent political extremism and processes of violent radicalization, with a particular interest in the potential for violent radicalization via the internet. Analysis of violent political extremist narratives aimed at radicalizing youths across a range of ideologies formed the core of her most recent research, along with exploring the potential for the development of effective counter-narrative strategies. Ms. McInerney has been invited to contribute on related issues at a variety of international events, including at the United Nations, European Commission, the OSCE, and the U.S. Naval Postgraduate School. So, Lisa, welcome. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Dean, for the opportunity to be here today.
Could you begin by telling us a little bit about VoxPol? What is it? What's its mission?
Okay, so VoxPol is a large European-funded project on violent online political extremism. It's what the EU calls a network of excellence, which means that it's more than a research project. It involves a large number of stakeholders. So by stakeholders in this particular context, we're talking about policymakers, law enforcement, social media company representatives, and many other actors that have an interest in this area of violent online political extremism.
And I was talking to you a little earlier, and you said oftentimes what happens, what VoxPol does, is you will get queries from decision makers really across the EU, and that will sort of direct your research. Is that correct?
Okay, so basically how it works in VoxPol is we've got a five-year program, which was set out at the submission stage of the project. So when we applied for funding, we started writing this in 2010. Things have moved on pretty much very quickly since then. It's a really fast-changing space online in terms of extremist content, choice platforms, etc. So we had mapped out generally what we were doing for that five years. So that involves a lot of different work packages and different activities within work packages. And our contract is our description of work. So all that detail is outlined in there. However, we do have some room for maneuver within that, insofar as, you know, we're doing case studies of various different ideologies, for example, and the choice of actors, for example, groups that we might wish to focus on might be very different today to when they were when we started writing the proposal. Things move on really, really fast. Yeah, so it's a lot of our work is output and goes directly to policymakers and interested parties because we have this stakeholder group.
So now we met a couple of years ago at a conference here in the US. And I guess maybe one question people have is you're part of a European organization. What brings you to the US?
We're in the US fairly frequently. The biggest academic conference we go to regularly every single year is the International Studies Association Annual Convention. So that rotates around different cities in North America. So it's always Canada, the United States, and mostly the United States. So we're regulars at that particular event where there are a lot of panels related to terrorism more generally. And usually there are quite a number of panels as well related to online activity, which we're interested in.
So given sort of your almost global reach, even though you have a European-focused mission, I was wondering, have you noted any sort of similarities or differences between extremism in Europe and in the US?
Because we study online activity, the internet is global. It's globally used, and there's a lot of interaction between people that are, you know, in distant places. So nowadays with the internet, if you're into something really strange and wonderful and you've nobody in your town, your locality that has similar interests, you can reach out and find people online that are most like yourself. They could be thousands of miles away. So when we study the internet, it's really difficult to confine it to a particular locality unless you're looking for some particular group that is only in one local region. But you'll often find that there are similar messages, there's dissemination, there's networking with similar others elsewhere.
So it really forces you, you have to look globally.
Yes.
Even if you have a restricted sort of geographic, physically geographical limit to where you're working, right?
Absolutely. Because even if you're looking at social media content, for example, and you want to analyze that geographically, it's really, really difficult because in a lot of cases, say, for example, on Twitter, there might be no geographic data in that profile. You can probably analyze it and figure out, you know, or suspect that somebody's in a particular location, but you have no way of knowing for sure where they're coming from. So it is global data we're pretty much looking at.
So now Europe obviously has a long history of radicalization and political extremism. Are there lessons from past errors, for example, those maybe in Northern Ireland, that you think can be applied to the way we think about the topic today? I mean, I know oftentimes we kind of think terrorism started on 9/11, but and so we kind of have to invent everything anew. But are there lessons we can learn from errors before social media and before the internet even?
Yeah, I think certainly we can learn a lot from Northern Ireland, and especially today when a lot of the people who were involved in political violence and a lot of people who were involved in the peace process who know a lot about what went on are reasonably open to discuss the dynamics. What you will find when you do talk to people is there were a number of mistakes made, let's say, in Northern Ireland in terms of maybe not policy, but in practice. There were entire communities that were impacted on a daily basis with checkpoints, questioning. There were communities alienated or, you know, tarred with the same brush because they were from one particular community. And that was rather difficult because over time, I think a lot more people became sympathetic and, you know, supportive on the fringes, let's say, for the actors that were involved in political violence. So when you look at the Provisional IRA, for example, they needed support, not just the people involved in the group, in the hierarchy per se. They needed others. They needed support. They needed people to supply cars. They needed people to turn a blind eye to the smuggling that was going on down the road. They needed a wider audience. And certainly there were events in Northern Ireland that would have spurred more support for them over time.
So it sounds a little bit like you're talking about both radicalization of people and perhaps implications for countering radicalization, or the buzzwords now is countering violent extremism.
Yeah. If I could just come back in there. So basically other lessons learned. Okay, everybody thinks that, you know, the internet is new. It's changed things dramatically with regard to violent extremist content. But we have to remember that the internet is just another medium. Pre-internet era, the Provisional IRA were able to work away quite well and do what they wanted to do by getting their message out. Like lots of other groups worldwide, they used video cassettes, they used pamphlets, they had murals, they had whatever to get their message out. And they were able to gain support internationally. They were able to fundraise in other countries, particularly in the US, for example, which was really important to them. And they were able to do that from quite a distance because a large Irish diaspora, for example, here in the United States.
And all of that without social media.
All of that without social media, precisely. And in terms of communication, like now we've got WhatsApp and various other modes of communicating and Telegram, etc. Back in the day, for communicating with regard to logistics, you had the CB radio in Northern Ireland, used in, not just in Northern Ireland, but elsewhere.
Right.
Also, so there was always a means of communicating and a means of disseminating the message to others. The message, whether it was for recruiting others or mobilizing support or fundraising or whatever.
Wow. Now, one of the interesting things about what's going on in Europe and the EU is since it's made up of many different countries, countries are all sort of experimenting with various strategies to prevent or reverse radicalization. Are there any sort of lessons learned, whether online or in person, sort of are any nations having more success than others, or are there any sort of strategies or takeaways that are sort of emerging?
Yeah, if I could just go back again to what we were talking about in Northern Ireland. A lot of people think today that the CVE, countering violent extremism, different ways of, you know, developing counter narratives and changing people's minds, that this is all new. It's old hat. Basically, in Northern Ireland, go back to decades ago, there were campaigns on television in Northern Ireland aimed at encouraging people to exit organisations and to prevent people getting involved in organisations. Some were more successful than others, and there's some interesting work, I think, to be done there. Lessons to be learned from that. It's almost like we're reinventing the wheel completely today. Different target, different audience, but it's the same idea.
Do you get the feeling that is that a source of data that is not being researched well enough? Like, is there a lot more work to be done there, or are people trying to reinvent the wheel?
I think there's definitely more work to be done. There's a lot of work to be done in this area, but there are lessons to be learned. So we need to do some more research on these past initiatives to learn from them. So, for example, there was one particular video that seems to resonate more when I talk to people in Northern Ireland that watched all of these ads back in the early 1990s, I think it was. There's only one of these ads that they remember, typically. So there's something to be learned from that. So I'm doing some work on that at the moment. In terms of Europe more generally today, there's some extremely good work done in different states. We had the example of Denmark, for example, back the moment people left to go to Syria, foreign fighters left Denmark. The Danish services started working, social services started working immediately with the families of those who had gone to pave the way for their ultimate return, which was really, really clever, I think, to do. There are other initiatives in the Netherlands, for example, are pretty well advanced in that area as well. A lot of people working on the ground, trying to prevent people going to the Middle East to fight, and also working with returnees. There's also a very long history in Germany in particular, on the far right. Exit Deutschland, for example, have an initiative where they are trying to work with the members of the far right that might want to exit the organization to facilitate them in some way and say, look, if you ever want to talk, we're here. And they've had some really clever initiatives over the years, and they're on the go for quite some time. And we've a lot of lessons to be learned there also, I think.
Now, Voxpol, in addition to the research you do for policymakers, you also publish a number of reports that are available to the general public. And you have a pretty active website as well that sort of previews a lot of research. Could you maybe talk a little bit about that? And are there any publications that you guys have maybe put out recently that you'd recommend?
Yeah, we've had a few publications in recent times. We have one, Check the Web, which is looking at the ethics of policing and monitoring online activity. Also, we have another report that's primarily focused on lone actors. There's an updated version of that report published in an academic journal. And we've also recently published a literature review on online radicalization, just went to print last week. All of those reports are available open access via our website. There are a lot more reports in the pipeline. Most of the reports will be out in the next, well, the project runs to the end of 2018, so the bulk of the work is yet to be seen. Other than that, we also have a repository. We have an online library on voxpol.eu. It's a go-to place for all articles, academic articles, policy papers, reports, video content, anything related to violent online political extremism. We're trying to make available open access as much as possible. So where there is an open access version to, say, a journal article, we will have that accessible via the online library. In some cases, it's not possible to do that, but in most cases, it is. So what that means is that most of our material, it's not our material, it's most of the material that we have linked in the library is completely accessible to people who are not academics, because normally academics through their institutions can access through their libraries, you know, journal articles that you've got to subscribe to. So most of our consumers of content are actually outside of academia. So policymakers, law enforcement, etc. They don't generally have access to this content. We're basically facilitating this.
And then lastly, I was wondering if you could recommend, maybe apart from a Voxpol publication, something you would recommend for our listeners if they wanted to know a little more about either online radicalization, perhaps extremism in Europe, sort of your choice.
Okay, so what I would say is that post 9/11, there were a lot of academic articles out there on terrorism, and a lot of them lacked empirical evidence. A lot of the writing was highly emotive. In the last few years, there's more empirical work being done, but still there's an awful lot more work yet to be done. And I really cannot recommend one particular article that would be a go-to item. However, what I would say is that anybody interested in this area and violent online political extremism, if you do want to find what is there and what is good, the go-to place is actually the online library on voxpol.eu.
We actually use it quite a bit here. We've used it a lot of times as a great reference. It is super and very easy to navigate and look through. So I second that recommendation. That's great.
That's good to hear.
So Lisa, again, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Dean.
Again, all links can be found in the show notes and on our website at www.njhomelandsecurity.gov. If you have any ideas or topics for future episodes, please contact us on Twitter at NJOHSP or email us at intelunclass@njohsp.gov. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe to Intelligence Unclassified.